Good morning, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, the state legislature is set to vote today on Ohio's much-discussed and debated capital budget. Representative John Cross shares his thoughts on the final plan. Also this morning, small businesses are the lifeblood of every community and every community's economy, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants to give them the recognition they've earned on a national scale. I'll tell you more. And we have details on programs and events in the coming month at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. Executive Director Sarah Clevidence will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, June 26th, 2024. Big news here that I heard yesterday. I don't know if you heard this. Hooters is the latest restaurant to close multiple locations. Hooters. Now, don't worry. The one in Toledo is safe. I looked it up. I went, that was the first thing that I wondered about. Is the one that we have near us going to close? No. At least for now, the one in Toledo is fine. But Hooters is a chain with a unique conundrum, really, if you think about it. On the one hand, their shtick doesn't really play in the 21st century, given our modern sensibility on objectifying women. But on the other hand, if they were to do away with those well-endowed waitresses in their tight t-shirts, people might actually start to realize that the food sucks. So they've got a problem. Hooters does. The latest chain to be closing restaurants. What else is going on among the first things that you need to know this morning? The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is, speaking of corporate news, this is something that I'm actually surprised it took this long to figure out. And I think this is a great idea. Mattel is going to make its games accessible to the colorblind. If you think of like a card game like Uno, all right? The company aims to make its games accessible by distinguishing the four main colors that are used, like in Uno, by simple added symbols on the cards and other game pieces for other games. So they will still be multicolored, but for those who can't distinguish from one color to the next, they will add symbols to make it easier. And I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I could just imagine being in the corporate office when somebody came up with this idea, and I'm imagining everybody else sitting around the table looking at it and saying, why didn't we think about this earlier? The company aims to make 80% of its games colorblind accessible by the end of this year and 90% in 2025. So that's actually pretty cool. So kudos to Mattel for that brilliant revelation there. And again, while we're on the subject of corporate news, this I saw the other day and I thought was really interesting. Walmart is going to be replacing the price labels on its shelves with digital screens. By 2026, they anticipate having all of their stores converted instead of the paper labels, which, whenever they change prices, can take hours, if not days, to relabel all of their shelves. And obviously, it's pretty easy to miss one or two with the thousands upon thousands of items that they stock. And I think we've all had that, right, where we've taken an item off the shelf and noted the price, but then when we go to check out, it scans at a different price, probably. And I know a lot of times people think, well, they're just trying to, you know, they're pulling a fast one on customers. I would imagine at least that may be in some cases, but I would imagine in many cases it's just a case of the price has been changed and they missed it on the relabeling it on the shelf. And they're constantly rolling back prices and, you know, all of this. So this is very labor-intensive to change It goes back to, you remember the days when each individual product had a price tag on it, and they did away with that and just started labeling the shelves to make it easier. This will make it easier still, these electronic screens on the shelf. The retailer says it will improve customer experience. The only concern is some have worried that maybe they would implement surge pricing, like certain times of the day, things will be more expensive, and then later on in the day, they can lower the price or what have you. But Walmart pledges that they are not going to do that. They say it's just saving labor costs is the reason they're doing it. A price change that used to take an associate 2 days to update will now take only minutes with this new system. Walmart insists the system will not be used to charge more during peak hours. We have no plans to do that. Would not raise prices when our customers are visiting us the most. So, yeah, that does actually make a lot of sense. You don't want to, just when you're the busiest, you raise the prices. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, but anyway, that's kind of interesting. Coming soon to a Walmart near you. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started. This is crazy. Does your dog or your cat need to slim down a little bit? We have a problem with overweight pets in this country, and now drug manufacturers are seizing on the opportunity. They are looking at making weight loss drugs for our pets. These would be adaptations of those GLP-1 drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy for animals. Ocava Pharmaceuticals is working on this, and they have recently published results of a pilot study. They found that some animals did lose weight while taking this medication. And since more than half of all dogs and cats worldwide are classified as overweight or obese and can suffer from the same weight-related health problems and complications as humans, this is an idea whose time has come. Put your pet on Ozempic or Wegovy to help lose weight? That's crazy. I mean, we've long known that anything that they can do medically to treat humans, they can adapt to treat animals, but that's just crazy to put put Fido on Ozempic, I guess. We're coming up on the 4th of July week, big travel week anticipated in this country. 75% of Americans are planning on taking a road trip this summer. Maybe it'll be 4th of July week, maybe not, but at some point this summer, 75% of Americans are planning to take a road trip. And WalletHub has ranked the best states for summer road trips. Best states for a road trip. Top five: Texas, Minnesota, New York, Louisiana, and Florida are the best states for a summer road trip. And Ohio, incidentally, sits just outside the top five at number six. How about that? They looked at everything from gas prices to scenic vistas, road conditions, safety. You know, a lot of different factors that they took into account here. And Ohio sits just outside of the top five at number six. The worst states for a road trip: Arkansas, Hawaii. It's kind of hard to take a road trip to Hawaii. But Arkansas, Hawaii, California, New Jersey, and Washington State. So, I don't know. I'm not sure that I would agree with Washington State. That's a beautiful state. That is a beautiful state. Gas prices are high, so they probably got dinged for gas prices. And same thing with California. I mean, that's got maybe one of the best road trip routes in all the world, the Pacific Coast Highway. I mean, it's just beautiful. But again, is it expensive? So anyway, according to AAA, 33% of Americans planning to travel more than 250 miles away from home this summer. So, but you don't have to, because Ohio is one of the best states for road trips. So if you can't take a long trip, don't be discouraged. Ohio will do just fine. Thank you. And speaking of vacations and road trips and all of that, TripAdvisor is out with their 2024 Traveler's Choice Awards, rating the best attractions to visit in the U.S. and around the world. And topping the list, both domestically and internationally, is the Empire State Building in New York. That is the number one best attraction to visit in the U.S. and even in the world. Now, I've done that, and I know a lot of folks have. You go to New York, you got to do the Empire State Building. It is quite the vista to see when you're standing at the top of the Empire State Building in New York. The rest of the top five in the U.S., Aialani Palace in Honolulu, second best attraction, followed by Central Park in New York at number three, the Coral Reef State Park in Key Largo, and Stetson Mansion in DeLand, Florida at number five. So those are the top five best attractions in the U.S. Globally, after the Empire State Building, the Eiffel Tower in Paris is number two. The Anne Frank House in Amsterdam is number three. The Basilica de la Sagrada Familia in Barcelona is number four. And the Cayman Crystal Caves, Grand Cayman, number five. So those are the don't miss attractions 2024, according to TripAdvisor. Won't see any of those in Ohio, but still a good place for a road trip. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. The Federal Railroad Administration is studying a railway plan for Cincinnati. If approved, Amtrak may add routes from Union Station that would link the Queen City with Nashville and New Orleans. Rail is reemerging across the Buckeye State. One route connects Cleveland to Columbus, to Dayton, to Cincinnati. Another connects Cleveland to Detroit through Toledo. And a Pittsburgh to Chicago route would go through Columbus. In Cleveland, an accused murderer was mistakenly released from Cuyahoga County Jail because of a clerical error. Two inmates with the same initials were confused and the wrong one was released. Now police are searching for 22-year-old Amarian Sanders, who is supposed to go to trial August 19th. In Columbus, four people, including a suspect, were hospitalized following a stabbing incident that included an officer-involved shooting. The suspect is in stable condition. It is unclear if he injured himself prior to being arrested. The case is under investigation. There's new information about injuries and fatalities involving public transportation in Ohio. ONN's Clay Gordon has details.
There are approximately 183 bus crashes every day. Ohio ranks 12th in the country in fatalities from these accidents. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that while Cincinnati ranks below Columbus and Cleveland for bus-related accidents, the issue of cause and responsibility requires investigation. In the last 10 years, almost 1,500 bus incidents have been reported in Ohio's major city.
For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
So our cover story this morning, later today, the state legislature set to vote on Ohio's much-discussed and debated capital budget. Finally getting a vote on this. Representative John Cross is with us this morning. Talk more about that and a lot of the other stuff that's going on, really a laundry list of things that are going to be voted on the legislature today. So we appreciate you dropping by before heading to Columbus.
I got my battle suit and tie on ready to go today.
You do. So the capital budget, this seems late. This usually would have been voted on long before this, would
it
not?
Well, yes, we're excited to actually put a final vote to the capital budget and the one-time strategic investment fund.
Right.
Back in the spring when we talked about this and became controversial because of the campaign, we said, listen, promises made, promises delivered. And I'm excited today to say that we got all $9.9 million that we talked about back in the spring is coming back to the district.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's a little later. The Senate took up the bill, I think, in April, May, worked through their time frame. But the good news is there'll be an emergency clause, Chris, in the bill. So instead of waiting 90 days after the bill signed, that those dollars will become available as soon as the governor signs the bill.
Okay. And it's interesting because you referenced the controversy surrounding the Strategic Investment Fund. And the controversy stemmed from the House basically saying, okay, we're going to take half of this and allocate it. The Senate will take another half of this and allocate it as they see fit.
Right.
And there was some discussion over whether
politics gets
that
away.
Should have been, those allocations should have been announced, whether there should have been more cooperation, so on. In the end, none of those allocations that the House put in there for their half were changed.
Correct. So, you know, it's challenging. I mean, that's why I was confident to go out and announce back in the spring that the House passed its version and this is the money that we're going to eventually bring home. And, you know, it was frustrating because the deal was really, if you really focus on who the deal makers are, the deal makers were the chairman of the Finance Committee of the House and the chairman of the Finance Committee of the Senate. And both said to me and both said to a lot of folks, we're not going to touch each other's money. It's one-time strategic funds, $350 million for the House, $350 for the Senate. And guess what? It happened just like they said. And so the good news is I can go out there proudly and tell my constituents that what I told you three months ago is true. Those dollars are coming back. And here's what's really good about this, Chris, is it's their tax dollars coming back home. Instead of $10 million going to Columbus, Cleveland, or Cincinnati, those monies are coming back here to help projects like the YMCA, like the county park system, like Owens Community College that's going to provide a truck driver training program on its campus.
Mm-hmm.
The Hancock County Fair is going to see $500,000 for their fair improvements. So those are dollars that you can see. Unlike if we put $700 million in a state budget, poof, you'll never see where the hell that money goes.
Mm-hmm.
I love this because we can tell taxpayers, look right there, that's where your dollars went.
Yeah. Now, all of that being said, sure, the allocation, the side of the allocation from the Senate seem to go elsewhere other than
the 83rd district.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
It seemed as though they deliberately avoided the areas that got allocations from the House.
There's politics involved in that. I mean, listen, Matt Huffman's running for the Speaker of the House from the Senate, and he's probably trying to buy votes and figure out where he can fluff up other House members' dollars. But, you know, listen, I get to say that because I'm a lame duck a member of the House, so I'm just I'm talking truth here. But listen, that's true. You are very observant that the Senate did not put additional funds in the 83rd district, but that's okay. Listen, $10 million is a good chunk of money. We got our fair share, and I'm pleased to fight hard for that. Pleased to fight to keep those dollars in the budget now, and that's separate too. Just for those who are playing the home game, there's the one-time strategic investment fund, which is very unique. First time we've ever done this.
Right.
Then there's the traditional capital budget.
Regular capital budget.
That's right.
And which leads to the question that I was going to ask. What is in that part of the legislation
so
of note?
We traditionally get about $1.5 million in the capital budget, but this time we only got one project, which was a $200,000 project to help the Adamus Board here in Hancock County make some improvements to their office and operations. So we're very excited to help them get that done. We certainly would have loved to have our full $1.5 million, but again, beggars can't be choosers. I'm not going to throw a fit or a tantrum because we didn't get, you know, more money in the district. Close to $10 million is a good chunk of money to bring back home. Probably a record level from any legislator in this district to bring that back home. Proud to do that.
Just to clarify one thing that you mentioned, the Hancock County Fair getting $500,000 from the Strategic Investment Fund, that is in addition to the roughly $100,000
that all of the fairs
around Ohio are getting.
That's correct. We love our county fairs, and traditionally over the last couple of years in the budgets we've earmarked dollars to help support our county fairs.
And mm-hmm.
Again, you know, there's a single event where you can touch a lot of taxpayers and a lot of people in the county mm-hmm. when you support a county fair like that. So that additional $100,000 that the fair will get will hopefully be put to good use on top of the $500,000 that are coming in.
A good chunk of change
for the
Hancock County Fair.
Yeah.
That's just one of many, many bills.
30-some bills today.
That will be voted on today. And I was looking at the Newswire story on the session in the legislature today. It says the capital budget lays out $4.2 billion in spending, including millions for improvements to jails, universities, state parks, and other properties. There are several dozen other proposals that could go to a vote today. Some of those deal with energy and the state's power grid, additional regulations on recreational marijuana, a Republican-sponsored measure that would set requirements for free speech and intellectual diversity at public universities. When you look at many of those other bills, what are some of the highlights? Well, one of those,
you know, I want to talk about energy for a second. You know, certainly, you know, House Bill 6 and the scandal that's around House Bill 6 has really put a damper to furthering energy policy. But last week, when it was 90 degrees out, what most people did not know is an energy company called me and said, hey, we have to shut down part of the grid in your district because it is overcooked at 2 o'clock. Usually it happens by 5 o'clock. It happened at 2 o'clock. Folks, we are very close to blackouts. We are very close to, you know, losing our power grid because we're not creating enough generation because we've lost coal plants. You know, we don't have enough generation in Ohio to create the demand. So Ohio really needs to get back on the horse and start working on energy policy to help make improvements for the future. Because when you get called and said, we got to shut your business down, or we got to, your home is going to lose power for 2 or 3 hours when you're either at home working or you're on the life support system, that's not good.
So this measure that will get a vote today dealing with that, what does that do?
Well, just the I think there's one bill that encourages Congress to act on you know,
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
You're fine. There's one bill that we're going to it's a House resolution. We're going to urge Congress to roll back some of the greenhouse gas proposals that are killing our coal industry. You know, we're looking at other kind of energy policy, but basically at the end of the day, we need to support additional generation, whether it's coal, nuclear, you know, renewables, whatever you want to do. It has to be a lot more than what we're doing now.
We mentioned regulations on recreational marijuana. Yeah. You were telling me before we went on the air that there were some that were proposed that were basically scrapped.
Yeah, there was definitely a bill that was trying to be forced down our throat that was not good. It was going to go against the will of the people, and I'm glad that's not really going to happen. Listen, the rulemaking process is happening. As I told you, you got to motivate me to with a bill to say, why would I want to vote on additional rulemaking on the marijuana bill when people have passed it? Now, for safety issues, figuring out where that funding is going to go, those are important measures. But I don't feel the pressure to pass a bad bill. Let's get something right. And what they proposed wasn't good for our district.
Let me ask you, frame it that way, among the other bills aside from the capital budget that will be voted on today, then are there any that jump out at you as saying, this is one that I can't support?
And no, I don't. Yeah, no, I think as I went through the 30-some bills, I think we're a yes on most of them. And I don't think there's much controversial votes today. Okay. So I think it's really about cleaning the docket, getting a lot of these bills moving through the legislative process.
Right, so that you can take the summer break and, you know,
this is it until the fall.
Obviously, as you mentioned, that will be something of a lame duck session for you beginning in the fall to the end of the year. Anything on the priority list that you want to take care of before you leave office?
Well, I've got two bills I'm actually working on. They're safety bills. One is the seatbelt bill, making seatbelts a primary violation. Everyone hates that. They're like, I'll cross while you're doing that. You have a big knucklehead. But really, we're trying to encourage safety and making sure as young kids start to learn how to drive, just put your damn seatbelt on, right? And the good news is we're going to roll back some pesky issues. Did you know that wearing headphones in your car was a primary violation? I didn't. There's some outdated laws that we can remove. Window tinting is one we're looking at, making it window tinting a secondary offense, not a primary offense.
It is kind of odd to think about some of those that are primary offenses when seatbelts aren't.
That's right. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we're just trying to save lives and get rid of some of the pesky things. Also, school bus safety. We're looking at a bill to help put cameras on buses so when people when a bus is stopped, kids are getting off the bus and people are flying by. How can we capture that on video so law enforcement can do their job and send a little ticket that says, don't do that again, and here's your violation, because kids are getting killed when they get off the bus. And that's as a parent who puts their kids on the bus. So there's a couple safety bills I'd like to see done. But, you know, generally, I think the capital budget is going to be my final hurrah. And as we go into lame duck in the fall, we'll see what comes up. But, you know, we're winding down here pretty good.
All right. Again, State Representative John Cross with us this morning. We'll let you go and head to Columbus because, as you said, it is a big day ahead. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, you know, we often talk about how small businesses are vital to local communities and the economy of local communities. Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants to give these small businesses their due on a national scale with a chance to be recognized in the prestigious and exclusive Co-100 list. And joining us this morning with details on how entrepreneurs can apply to be named among America's top small businesses is Jeanette Mulvey, Vice President and Editor-in-Chief of CO by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So, Jeanette, what is the Chamber hearing from small businesses these days? I guess give us kind of a brief state of a small business report.
We hear from small businesses every day here at the U.S. Chamber. In fact, 90% of our members are small businesses or local and state chambers of commerce. And the thing is that what we hear from them, you know, of course, we hear their challenges. We know the things that they're struggling with, you know, in any given month. But what we hear more often than not is actually their success stories. We hear about their innovations, their creative solutions to problems, how they're giving back to their community. And it really inspired us to rethink and expand our annual Small Business Awards program to this new program called the Co-100, which is what I'm here to talk about and hoping that I can convince your audience to apply.
So talk about how the Chamber provides support, not just for those challenges that you referenced, and obviously those are very well documented. We talk about them all the time. We know what they are, but also in terms of those success stories and to help further that success and even broaden those success stories.
Sure. Well, here at the Chamber, we actually have a publication, a platform for small businesses called CO. And I am the editor-in-chief of that publication. So CO helps 20,000 entrepreneurs every day start, run, and grow their businesses. And we feature their stories, the stories of small businesses on the site every day. And that's one of the reasons that we love this contest, is because it's a great pool of small businesses for us to read their stories and then to feature them on our site or in our events. The Chamber in general supports small businesses in that we are constantly advocating for them and for big businesses as well. And we really try to, in my world especially, think about this ecosystem between big and small businesses. Increasingly, we see that they rely upon each other. Small businesses are really relying on big businesses for services like supply chain and product distribution and e-commerce. And big companies depend on small companies because they need them as partners, but also because small businesses are really excellent at innovating and taking risk in a way that bigger companies aren't able to do as quickly. Mm. And that brings me back to the contest, because we have an opportunity there for small businesses to tell us about how they're innovating.
So how can local businesses apply to be named one of America's top 100 small businesses on the Co-100 list?
The first thing is, they know nothing else. All they need to know is that they need to go to co100.com. So that's co100.com. Everything is there, all the information and the application. What I will tell you now is we've done something unique, and this is, I want your audience to know, because if they're thinking, oh, I might be too small, or there's nothing special about me, I have no chance of being named to this list, you know, that's actually not true. Because what we've done is we've created 10 what we're calling categories of excellence. So you, as a small business owner entering the contest, get to choose what you want to be judged on. You can choose up to 5 categories. So you might be great at customer service. You might have a really great company culture, or you've been a multi-generational business. You can choose how you want to be judged. It takes about a half an hour to fill out the application, and you do that on call100.com. Now, we have extended the deadline for your audience until July 15th,
okay.
And I want to get in that we have a discount code for your audience so that they can get a discount off the application fee. The code is SmallBiz30, so SmallBiz30, and that will get them 30% off the application fee.
Okay. So what does one get if they were to make the list?
First of all, you don't even have to make the list for this to be worth your time, because we have a really amazing panel of judges, 30 judges who are small business journalists, influencers, advocates, experts, and they'll be reading all these applications. So this is free publicity for your business among people who really want to know about small businesses and might reach out someday if they want to write an article. So applying already gets you publicity. If you make the 100 list, the Co 100, which we will announce in August, the end of August, you will first of all be featured on our site. We'll write profiles about each company. You will probably get media requests. Our past winners have been interviewed by TV and newspaper stations in their local area. You will win a one-year free membership to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the Co 100 will be invited here in October to our awards ceremony and gala. We have some special programming and experiences that will be exclusive to them. No one else, just the Co 100, including meeting with the Olympic gymnast Dominique Dawes, who will be here to meet them. Our 9 semifinalists that day will receive $2,000, and our America's Top Small Business will receive $25,000.
Wow, pretty cool stuff there. So let me ask you, as editor-in-chief of Co, and by extension, Co 100, this program, what advice can you offer? Let me pick your brain a little bit. What advice could you offer to help someone make their application stand out?
Yeah, so we read a lot, thousands of applications over the last few years. And what we found is a few things that really, the ones that stood out had in common. The first is, tell us your story. Don't just give us information. Tell us the story. How did you come to start this business? What is your personal passion or interest or expertise that led you to start this particular small business?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, be very, very clear. Tell us exactly what you do, what products you sell, what services you offer. Don't assume that we understand your business model, because we may not. And lastly, tell us how you're better or different than your competition. Give us every reason to see clearly that you belong on the Co 100.
You know, it strikes me that not only is this the opportunity to get recognized, but also kind of share strategies that maybe other businesses and other communities can emulate to help make their communities stronger as well. So this is really kind of a win-win all the way around.
You know, that's an excellent point. Actually, this Co 100 will be together as a cohort, as it were, all year. So these people will have an opportunity to meet each other, to share best practices, to share their stories, to participate in things together. So it is really a networking opportunity as well. And, you know, being a small business owner is very lonely. Rarely do small business owners have a group, a support group around them of other business owners. So this is an opportunity for that as well. So thank you for making that point.
Again, Jeanette Mulvey is Vice President, Editor in Chief of Co by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, talking about the Co 100 list program or competition. Mention again the website where folks can get more information and to submit their entry.
Sure. Co100100.com. Co100.com, and use that code SmallBiz30 to get 30% off the application fee.
Deadline, you said, is coming up July 15th, right?
That is correct. July 15th.
Very good. So we need to get on this now. Jeanette, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Information that makes a difference. Good mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
In Washington, D.C., Garrison Elementary School has a problem. They need to have one of their statues, apparently. They need to have it repaired. And no, it's not because it was vandalized by protesters or
you know, activists or just somebody who, you know, was looking to vandalize the statue. That has nothing to do with it. Apparently, you know how hot it's been. Well, apparently, the sweltering temperatures actually melted the wax sculpture of President Abraham Lincoln sitting outside the elementary school. The extreme temperatures have been very hot. And the wax sculpture actually started to melt in the heat wave. And in this case, President Lincoln has lost his head, quite literally. School leaders have taken President Lincoln's head to an artist who specializes, I guess, in wax sculptures in the hopes of having it repaired and reattached in the coming weeks once it cools down. Whose brilliant idea was it to put a wax sculpture outside the elementary school in the summer? I mean, it gets hot. I mean, I know it's not, you know, Florida hot or, you know, equator hot, but it still gets hot. And it's a wax sculpture. Somebody maybe should have thought of this. At one point. Elsewhere in the broken news, a Missouri woman is accused of stealing an estimated $24,000 worth of lottery tickets from her place of work. And here's how she was caught. According to documents obtained by local news reporters, Kelsey Lynn Schnetzler, age 34, admitted to stealing the tickets between October of last year and March of this year. And what she would do, apparently she would place a cup over the camera in the office of the convenience store, then steal the keys to the safe where the lottery tickets were stored, and she would grab them and stash them in her purse. Did she not think that someone was going to notice and think that, I mean, you're looking at the security video and you see her place a cup over the security camera. You got to figure that nothing good is going to happen, you know? Here's the thing, I'll put the cup over the security camera and no one will know. Yeah, when they see the cup go over the security camera, they think maybe something is amiss here. Anyway, it is not clear how many winning tickets were among the ones that she stole. So how much money she, quote unquote, won from her lottery tickets is unclear, although we may learn more when she faces a judge next month. So. Follow up on that. let's see. This I thought was kind of an interesting story. Let me just read the story here. And then I'll tell you why I found it rather humorous. Edward Kang has been arrested and charged with attempted murder after allegedly flying over 1,000 miles to confront a gamer that he met online. Apparently, Mr. Kang flew from New Jersey to Florida in order to confront a fellow video game enthusiast. Struck him with a hammer after entering his house through an unlocked door. The story goes on to say the victim and his stepfather were able to detain Mr. Kang until officials arrived. Apparently, they were playing the game Arch Age together when the fight began. There was some sort of disagreement which led to an all-out argument or fight. And that's when Mr. Kang decided to confront the victim in person. The victim in the case was initially hospitalized. He has since been released. He is going to recover. The local sheriff of Nassau County in Florida, Bill Leeper, says, Mr. Kang, it'll be a long time before you play video games again. So here's the the part of the story that actually gave me a chuckle. How surprising is it? It says that the victim and his stepfather were able to detain Mr. Kang until officers arrived to place him under arrest. Are we at all surprised that the victim lived with his parents? Hey, video gamer lived with his parents. So, I know. That was just one of the first things that I thought. Of course there's going to be somebody else home. Not going to live alone. There's going to be somebody else home at the time. Not a really well thought out plan there. Let's see. A couple of other items on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. In Tasmania, this is from the International File, a museum and art gallery has put works by Pablo Picasso on display in the women's restroom. That's quite a fancy restroom. You got works by Picasso on display in the women's room. Apparently, the art gallery opened a women's-only art installation last year, which a local tribunal declared discriminatory after a man complained about the women's-only art installation. So in response, the curator of the museum turned the ladies' lounge into a women's restroom. They can't do anything about that. The artwork evokes in men the lived experience of women forbidden from entering certain spaces throughout history, according to the curator, Kersha Kacheli, is how she described the project. The court said, you've got to let men in. So she said, fine, I'll make it a women's restroom. Now men can't get in. There you go. And finally, in the broken news this morning, just when you thought you had heard the last of former U.S. Representative George Santos, he is back in the news. George Santos, the disgraced former representative, former congressman, who made history as just the sixth lawmaker in history to be expelled from the House of Representatives. You know the backstory of George Santos. Well, now he has announced a new platform. He has opened a page on OnlyFans. OnlyFans. That is the online platform known for people who make amateur adult content. George Santos has an OnlyFans. He announced his new endeavor, stating the moment you've all been waiting for. Only on OnlyFans will you get the full behind-the-scenes access to everything I've been working on. I don't want that kind of behind-the-scenes access to everything you've been working on. he says, even though OnlyFans is known primarily for its adult content, he insists that his account will not involve anything sexual whatsoever. But it'll still cost you $29.99 per month to find out. No, thank you. No, thank you. I'm not going to take any chances. Santos on OnlyFans. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Riverside Civic Concert Series means great music each Wednesday night. Along with the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, WFIN is proud to emcee another season of concerts at the Band Shell at Riverside Park. This week, the Findlay Civic Band. Concerts are at 7 p.m. and Sunday morning at 11. We air that week's concert courtesy of Caldwell Banker Flag City. Join us on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you remember your first car? According to a new survey of 2,000 drivers, this was commissioned by Castrol, all right, the motor oil. The survey of 2,000 drivers, 87% of Americans remember
what their first car was. And I was actually surprised that it wasn't higher than that, 87% overall. Breaking it down by age, baby boomers, 91% of baby boomers say they remember their first car. In fact, 61% of those in the survey wish that they could go back in time and take better care of their first car. Again, I was surprised that it's only 61%. I would think it would be much, much, much higher. My first car did not treat it with kid gloves. No. Only 14% of Americans dislike their cars, which I thought was kind of interesting. 49% of car lovers, self-proclaimed car lovers in the survey, have named their car. Now, I have never done that. 49% have named their car. Most often, those who name their car will do so based on its personality. 37% say their car is a personality. 21% name their car based on how it performs. It's kind of interesting. When it comes to car maintenance, and again, because the poll was commissioned by Castrol, they focused on car maintenance and mentioned 61% wish that they could go back in time and take better care of their first car. 25% of drivers, 1 in 4, prefer to change their own oil as opposed to paying somebody else to do that. Certainly cheaper that way. Other common ways to show some love to your car: washing, waxing, taking it out for a leisure drive. As we say, like we're treating the car by taking it out on a leisure drive. Interestingly, 38%, just 38% of those in the survey love their current car. We talk fondly about our first car. Only 38% of us love our current car. Time to get details on upcoming programs and events in the coming month. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library, Director Sarah Clevidence is with us to talk about what's happening. And you actually have an event coming up this weekend, right?
We do.
Big event.
We have the Wildlife Encounter with the Ohio Wildlife Center this Saturday at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
The Friends of the Library are sponsoring this fun family event. This is our big family program for Summer Read. So we held Under the Skylight.
Yeah, I remember we were talking about this when we previewed Summer Read, mm-hmm. the Summer Read program. So talk a little bit about what this is and what they'll be bringing here.
Yeah, so the Wildlife Encounter will feature some animal ambassadors. These are typically animals that were treated at the Ohio Wildlife Center's hospitals. Their goal is always to rehabilitate animals so that they can be re-released into the wild. But but sometimes they can't be, and those animals get to become animal ambassadors. So they'll be visiting the library to share stories about their lives as animals.
Okay.
We'll learn about the natural history of native wildlife in Ohio and how we can live with the native wildlife respectfully, and get to learn more about these great animals.
You know, it's becoming more and more difficult to do with urban sprawl, and as our population continues to fan out into wild areas, a lot more of those types of encounters.
Absolutely, so, are, and we want to know how to be safe as we're having those encounters.
Yeah. And yet, These are we're always fascinated by
absolutely
wild animals.
Absolutely. Yeah. We won't know which animals are coming until they arrive on Saturday, and the youth services manager and I have joked that we hope that it's not a native snake. That wouldn't be our favorite, but I know that some of the kids would be absolutely thrilled to get to meet one of Ohio's snakes, and it would still be very fascinating. I just might prefer to meet the snake from a distance.
So this is happening on Saturday, you said?
This is Saturday at 10:30 Under the Skylight.
Okay.
No registration required. Lots of room for everyone. This one's sponsored by our friends at the library, so we're grateful for their support.
Very good. So certainly circle that on the calendar. What are some of the other things that are coming up as we head into the month of July?
Well, our big one we have to mention is we're in the middle of Summer Read. But
right.
Just because we're in the middle doesn't mean it's too late to sign up. There's still several weeks left. Lots of opportunity to read, report, win great prizes. We have programs happening all summer for all ages. We always focus heavily on children this time of year, but there's great things for adults too. In July, we'll see programs on American Sign Language, how to wear a kimono, conversation groups for those who are practicing their English language skills. So a big variety coming up. One of the really cool things that's happening this summer, and we often talk about the authors that we have through our virtual author talks, and this summer they're focusing on authors for kids, since it's summer and kids have a little more time to watch those things.
All right.
So the July 9th program will be Kate DiCamillo, the author of Mercy Watson.
Okay. Yeah. Folks will be familiar with that. Now, how do these are virtual author talks? How do folks, quote unquote, attend?
You attend those, but you go to the library's website or the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts website. Because we're offering these in conjunction. You just sign up there. You'll get a link to attend. If you didn't remember to sign up in time or something came up, you can't watch it when it's live, that's no problem. You can always go back and watch the recording of those.
Because they are archived.
They are archived,
that's,
yes.
That's really cool. So, again, that is on the 9th,
you said? That one's on the 9th, yes.
All right, very good. Anything else to highlight among the things that are going on at the library?
Well, you know, if you need some books to read, there's new ones coming in every
week. Yes. What is new for those who are looking for some summer reads?
Yeah, there's some big ones coming out in July. Catherine Colder is one of our most popular authors. The 27th title in her best-selling FBI thriller series, Flashpoint, will be released on July 2nd. She's a thriller suspense author. The Cove is the first one in the series, so if you know if you're not ready to start with number 27, summer's a great time to pick up a new series.
There you go. Now, do you have all of those in the collection?
We have all of those. And, remember, Chris, we're part of a consortium with 100 other public libraries in Ohio. So even if it's not checked in our building, odds are good we're going to be able to get pretty quickly for you from one of our friends.
Very good. What else is new on the shelves?
Emily Griffin, another very popular author at Contemporary Fiction, has The Summer Pact coming out. This one's more of a beach read. That publishes July 16th. And then Spell Shop by Sarah Beth Durst is a Library Reads pick of July. I don't know if you've heard of Library Reads before.
Okay. Tell us more about this.
Yeah. So this is a program where public librarians from any type of library around the country nominate books to be a library read. So it's a forthcoming title. This one is a favorite of librarians.
Okay.
So librarians everywhere say this is the one to read in July.
Pretty high praise.
Pretty high praise, yes. This is a fantasy. This one's great for fans of T.J. Klune, who is one of my favorite fantasy authors. It's available July 9th. All of these books, even though they're not out yet, you can go ahead and put them on hold so you can be one of the first to have them.
Okay, very good. And now those are adult reads.
Those are all adult reads.
There are always new. There's always new stuff coming in for kids as
There's new stuff coming in for all ages and all formats all the time.
Yeah, and so we've often mentioned this. If you are looking for something, but you're just not sure what, or what would be good, or what would be good for my kid at this age level, that's what you're there for.
That's our favorite question to get is, can you help me find my next book? We love to really dive into what you've enjoyed reading. There's certainly folks out there who think that they don't enjoy reading, so then we just want to know more about your interests. You know, what shows have you watched? Are you into cars? Are you into horses? You know, let us find something that sparks your interest.
You know, I would imagine one of the other things that you can say is, do you want something that'll take you a couple of days to read, a couple of weeks to read, a couple of months to read?
Right.
You know, because there are all kinds of, because I'm more of a quick I want a good story, but I want something that, you know, I can finish in a day or two.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. I don't like long books, but you know, that we have folks who really love to dive into a thick tome and really learn more about a subject. And that's great too. We've got something for everyone. We have, 273,000 items, just physical items in our collection. So there's something for everyone.
You counted them all. So again, if you are looking for a good read for the summer, read program, or independently, whatever, obviously library's got you covered. And mention again the program on Saturday with the Wild Animals.
Yes, Wildlife Encounter with the Ohio Wildlife Center, Saturday at 10:30, sponsored by the Friends.
All right. Again, Sarah Klevidence of the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library talking about things coming up in the coming month. I believe, July, right around the corner. Sarah, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Also connect with us on social media. Sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to email us directly if there's something you want to share. Again, check us out online at goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.